Riding free again over the rolling grass prairie, Clint felt a strong temptation to visit his father one last time, but there was the need to gain as much distance as he could from those who were certain to chase him. The sheriff and a posse, and possibly Zach Clayton again, would be on his trail and soon. And his father's place was not far enough from Cheyenne to hazard a stop there now. It was too bad, he told himself, for he could have gotten some supplies from his father. But he wouldn't suffer for food anyway, since he had his rifle back. The thing he must decide now was where he would run to. Clayton knew that his heart yearned to return to Montana and the woman waiting there for him. Clayton was bound to show up at Frederick Steiner's farm sometime. Consequently, that's the last place Clint should go. But the need to see Joanna seemed to have intensified tenfold since his second escape, and he felt he owed it to her to somehow get word to her. Ever since he had left her, he had felt an aching deep inside to see her again. Never having felt that way for anyone before, he was pressed to admit that he was in love. In love. Even the word seemed strange to him. Well, whatever the affliction was, he knew that he wanted to be with her more than anything else. Still, he could not in good conscience bring his troubles to roost on the Steiner brothers. He decided to make up his mind later. For now, he would just continue to ride north. Riding horseback from Cheyenne to Laramie, Zach Clayton arrived at the Wyoming Territorial Prison a couple of hours past dinner time. He went straight to the warden's office with the intention of persuading Boswell to do what he could to make Clint Connor's life easier. Hopefully, even convinced the warden to help with an appeal for a new trial. He was not prepared for the news awaiting him.
I'm sure that Connors is one hell of a deserving inmate. But the fact of the matter is that I don't have a prisoner by that name at the present time. I do have a fugitive by that name who's still very much at large.
What do you mean, Warden? Clint Connor was tried and sentenced day before yesterday. One of Quentin Bridges' deputies brought him in here yesterday afternoon.
Well, now, one of his deputies, name of Spade, brought in a railroad car he'd evidently arrested. At least he was handcuffed to the handrail.
Boswell sat observing a stunned deputy marshal for a few moments.
So, from where I'm sitting, nothing's changed in the status of my two escaped convicts. Ballinger and Connor are still running loose. Now, the proper thing to do is to turn it over to the Chief Justice in Montana Territory to put one of his marshals on their trail. They've already wired about a couple of bank holdups. Last week, two men in Helena held a pistol to the cashier's head and got away with $4,700 in cash. They escaped on horseback. Maybe one of their men might have better luck in running Ballinger to ground.
Damn it, Warden, I brought Connor in. It's not my fault Spade lost him, but if you think another marshal can do a better job, then go ahead and ask for one.
Well, why don't you just go ahead and track him down again, but next time, why don't you bring him on back here? I don't see why there needed to be a trial anyway. Convict escapes from here, we just catch him and throw his ass back in the cell again.
Clayton wasn't sure he wanted to go after Clint again. The young man didn't deserve to be incarcerated. He wasn't an outlaw. He might have told Boswell to go ahead and get another marshal to do the job, but if the law demanded that Clint had to be apprehended, Clayton preferred to be the one to do it. He felt that he owed Clint. Another lawman might be inclined to shoot first and ask questions later. As far as Ballinger was concerned, now that was a different story. Clayton wanted him badly, if for no other reason than the fact the son of a bitch shot his horse. Ballinger was a menace to the civilized world, a plague upon honest men and women. So Clayton would go again. He would pack up his war bag and his bedroll and start out for Yellowstone Country once more. Ballinger and that piece of dung he rode with would show up sooner or later, and he damn sure wanted to be there when he did. His gut feeling told him that Ballinger and Yancey would be intent upon putting some distance between themselves and Helena if they were indeed the two who pulled that bank job. Where would they go, though? Butte, maybe. But with plenty of cash, it was more likely some of the smaller towns back east. There were dozens of little settlements along the Yellowstone where a couple of outlaws could work their trade. It was settled then. He would concentrate on finding Ballinger and Yancey, since they were a menace to society. Clint would have to wait. If he disappeared into Canada or somewhere, that was the chance Clayton would have to take. The other two were far more important. Clell Ballinger braced himself in the stirrups against his horse's steep descent down a rocky slide to the bottom of the canyon. Small pebbles and loose shale cascaded around the horse's hooves, kicked up by Yancey's horse behind him. Reaching the floor of the canyon, he urged the horse onward, following the narrow canyon, reluctant to stop to rest the animal. It was not a sound idea for a couple of bank robbers to hang around Helena. The town had proper law now, it was true, but it wasn't that far removed from its vigilante days. And vigilantes were prone to hang any outlaws they caught.
Clell! Let up! My horses give out!
Ballinger pulled back on the reins to let Yancey catch up.
All right, I reckon we better rest him before we find ourselves walking out of these mountains.
He looked back over the way they had come.
I think we got away clean. If anybody's on our trail, they're a hell of a long way back. That looks like some sort of spring or something up ahead. We'll water the horses there.
Well, we'd better. I wasn't far from having to tote mine on my back.
Yancey was ready for a rest himself. The wound in his shoulder, though healing well enough, still caused him some pain. A small spring worked its way down through the notch in the canyon wall to form a small pool big enough for both horses to drink at the same time. While the weary mounts eagerly quenched their thirst, Yancey sat down with his back propped against a large rock.
We've been on the run for 2 days now. Ain't nobody come after us. I think it's time we count that money and split it.
What's the matter, Pete? You afraid I'm gonna run off with all of it?
I've been riding with you too long to trust you. Hell, that's a lot of money in that sack. I'm wanting to know just how rich I am.
It was a big score. Maybe the biggest they had ever made. And this time, there was only a two-way split. Unlike the days when there were as many as half a dozen riding with Ballinger. That was before Clell was caught and sent to prison. Yancey was now anxious to hold his share of the money.
All right. We gotta rest the horses anyway. We might as well see how much we got.
He took the bag from his saddle and dumped the money out on the ground.
God damn, look at that. Ain't that a sight to rest the eyes? Hell, this is twice as much as we took from that bank in Fort Collins.
Let's count it.
It took a while, but Ballinger counted the bundles and arrived at a total of $4,700. Both men were amazed, never dreaming it would amount to that much money. At Yancey's incessant prodding, Ballinger divided up the money. Since his arithmetic was not to be trusted, he did it by a simple one-for-you and one-for-me method until he got down to one last odd bundle, which he divided the same way, one bill at a time. Both men sat there a while and started contemplating their newly acquired wealth. It was a hell of a lot of money, and both men afforded themselves the pleasure of thinking of the many things that much money could buy. The two outlaws had ridden together for a good many years. But $4,700 was enough to send the larcenous mind of Clell Ballinger to thoughts of luxuries the money could buy if it were not split down the middle. The idea caused him to glance over at Yancey and smile, wondering whether his partner was thinking the same thing. It was a tempting thought to put a bullet in old Pete's head ride off with a stake big enough to set him up on Easy Street. Maybe go to San Francisco or someplace like that.
I reckon now's a pretty good thing when that fella run off with half our supplies.
There's plenty more little banks like that one to knock over for two good men like me and you. Two's the right number. We don't need no more men like we had in the old days.
Ballinger responded with a smile and a nod. He was still thinking about places he could go with all of the bank money. But putting those thoughts aside for the moment, he became restless to get moving again.
Damn, I need a drink of whiskey. Let's get the hell out of these mountains.
We probably ain't rested the horses enough yet.
We can take it easy on them for a spell. They ain't ready to lay down and die yet, and we're almost out of the hills. Hell, they'll make it.
They mounted the tired horses and pushed on, following the canyon until finally the hills were behind them and open prairie grass before them. With the crazy mountains to the east of them, they continued in a southerly direction, hoping to strike the Yellowstone somewhere around Big Timber. Late in the afternoon, Yancey, who was leading, pulled up short.
Looky yonder.
Ballinger pulled up beside him. Yancey pointed toward a small herd of cattle grazing near a tree-lined stream ahead. They sat there for a few minutes, looking the scene over.
I don't see but one man, unless there's somebody in the trees by the water. There's a chuck wagon under them trees. Might be nobody there but the cook.
Yancey was looking at the remuda with 20 or more horses grazing off to one side.
I don't know about you, but I'd like to pick up a fresh horse.
That ain't a bad idea. Let's ride on in and see if there's any more men around.
Percy Johnson opened his eyes when he heard two horses approaching from the north. Squinting them in an effort to identify the riders, he determined the two to be strangers.
Yeah, now who the hell is that?
Yep. Percy got to his feet. Reaching under the seat of the wagon, he pulled his rifle out just in case. It was mostly renegade Indians he was leery of, but two white men called for the same caution.
Hello, the camp. All right, we come in. We mean no harm.
Well, come on in then.
Percy held his rifle ready in case of mischief. He watched his visitors approach. The rest of the boys were out bringing in strays, so he was not pleased to be alone to receive visitors. Especially two as rough-looking as these.
Where you fellas headed?
We're on our way back toward Big Timber. Just two cowpokes looking to make an honest living.
Is that a fact?
Where's the rest of your crew?
Yancey started to dismount. Percy brought his rifle up before his chest.
I've not asked you to step down. The rest of the boys is close by. I expect them any minute.
Yancey settled back in the saddle. Ballinger just smiled.
There's no call to get cross with us, old man. We're just travelers on our way back to Big Timber. We wasn't fixing to ask you for nothing except maybe a cup of coffee and a word or two of friendly conversation. Hell, we can pay you for the coffee.
Well, you're welcome to a cup of coffee, I reckon. You don't have to pay for it.
He motioned with his rifle.
Hey, pot's on the fire there. Cup's on the tailboard. Help yourself.
Appreciate it, neighbor. I don't blame you for being careful. There's some mean jaspers riding this territory. It pays for a man to be cautious.
He and Yancey dismounted and helped themselves to the coffee.
Oh, it sure hits the spot. It's been a hard day's ride.
I'm fixing to start supper for the boys. There's plenty if you two want to stay around for something to eat.
Well, that's mighty neighborly of you. Me and my partner here might take you up on that.
Clell walked over to stand before Percy.
Oh, it's good coffee. You know, we might be interested in doing a little trading with you. Our horses is pretty much wore out.
Oh, I can see that. But you'll have to talk to the boss about that.
Oh, that's too bad. Because we could really make it worth your while.
Ballinger glanced at Yancey, who was standing behind him now.
How's our horses' $50 and a bump sound?
$50 and a bump? What do you mean, a bump?
A bump on the head.
A bump on the...
Yancey brought the barrel of his pistol down hard on the back of Percy's skull.
Get that rope yonder.
Yancey quickly tied Percy's hands and feet.
Let's pick us a couple of good ones and get saddles on them.
Riding fresh horses and leading the Morgan and Yancey's Palomino, they set out for the Yellowstone. 2 days' ride found them at the Yellowstone River, where the Boulder River joined it, and the little settlement called Big Timber for the tall cottonwoods there. They decided Big Timber offered everything they needed for the time being: a saloon, a trading post and general store, stables, and a blacksmith.
This looks to me like the very place we're looking for.
Clint Connor, fugitive, was making his way through Powder River country, following virtually the same path he had taken once before. After killing an antelope, he moved it a little more than 2 miles away next to a narrow stream and butchered the animal there. Before nightfall, he had a good campfire going and cooked the meat. When his appetite was sated, he felt the urge to sleep, but there was still work to do to dry some of the meat to take with him. Several times he interrupted his work to climb up to the brim of the ravine, where he would sit for a period, watching the prairie around him for signs of anyone approaching. He kept the periodic lookouts until darkness fell upon the ravine. He finally laid down for the night. In the morning, he ate more antelope and packed the portion of the animal he intended to carry. With Rowdy rested, he set out again, hoping to strike the Lightning River before dark. Pushing on across the prairie, he struck the Belle Fourche 2 days later, continuing along the same trail he had taken before when he had come upon Joanna. He told himself that it was the only trail he knew through that country, reluctant to admit that it was also a trail that led him closer to her. Common logic told him that he should not return to Frederick Steiner's farm, that it would be the first damn place Zach Clayton would expect to find him. Knowing that, he still continued on the same path, rationalizing his decision by deeming the country around the Powder and the Bighorn too dangerous for one white man alone. 4 days of hard driving brought him to the banks of the Yellowstone River, a few hundred yards upriver from the saloon where he had encountered the two men he had killed. With no desire to see the saloon owner again, he rode farther upriver to find a spot to make camp and think about what he should do. He was not entirely comfortable with the longing he felt to see Joanna Becker again. It was a new feeling for him, one that was hard to explain. The closest thing he could relate to the annoying sensation was feelings he had experienced in the past to see the rugged mountain country, or the longing he had experienced in prison for the sense of freedom on the outside. This new emptiness he felt was different and far more compelling. All said and done, he had to conclude that he might be in love with the woman.
That's a hell of a thing. Feels like I caught some kind of disease.
Even though she had promised to wait for him, he wondered whether by now she might have had second thoughts. After all, he was a convict.
What if her husband comes back?
Who would she choose then?
Damn it to hell. Being in love is too damn hard on a man. I'll go tell her what's happened. I owe her that. Then I'll head west.
Joanna Becker brushed a stray wisp of hair away from her face and got up from the milking stool. She had taken over the morning milking from Johan, since he had the added responsibility of helping build onto the cabin for her father and her. It was not a chore she particularly enjoyed, and her young cousin was laughingly patient when teaching her how. But she had gotten to the point where the cow accepted her clumsy touch and no longer tried to swat her with her tail. She put the stool out of the way and picked up her bucket and went back to the house to help her Aunt Bertha with breakfast. As usual, there were thoughts of Clint darting through her head. But on this chilly morning in late August, the thought seemed constant, and she tried to picture him on the day she last saw him. She never pictured him languishing in a prison cell, though, because that image upset her. How long, she wondered, would she have to wait? 3 years seemed an eternity now, but the marshal had said that it might be less. She would pray for that.
Joanna, check those biscuits in the oven. I think they might be getting a little too brown.
Bertha paused in her turning of the bacon in the big iron skillet to take a closer look at her niece.
Are you awake yet this morning? You look like your mind is still in bed.
Oh, I'm fine. Just still a little sleepy, I guess.
Putting the bucket down, Joanna glanced up at her aunt's typical closed-lip smile that seemed to say she understood everything you were thinking.
You know, it's gonna be such a nice day. I think I'd like to take my horse for a ride this afternoon.
It is fine weather for it. Any day now the weather is bound to turn cold. Why don't you go do that?
The afternoon was pleasant, sunny with only a slight breeze and just cool enough to warrant her coat. Although there was no destination in her mind, she knew where she would eventually end up. She let the little mare have her head, and the horse followed the track along the river from memory of other rides. As usual, they arrived at the same spot as before. Joanna could feel a slight increase in her heartbeat as she approached the little island of willows close to the river's bank. Moments later, her heart almost stopped when she was startled to discover a horse grazing among the willows. Fearful, she started to turn the mare at once, but she hesitated when the horse lifted its head to neigh at the mare. It was a buckskin. It looked like Clint's Rowdy, but she knew it couldn't be. Knowing she should turn her horse back toward home, she could not help but wonder about that horse. And then he appeared, walking from the cover of the trees.
Oh, Clint!
I was hoping you'd ride out this way. I remember you saying this was going to be our special place.
But how? What are you doing here? Did they let you go?
I'm afraid not.
Seeing the puzzlement in her eyes, he hastened to explain. After he had told her the entire story of his betrayal in the courtroom, she just looked into his eyes for a few moments.
Oh, Clint, what will you do?
I don't know. They'll be coming after me again. That much is pretty certain. And if it's Clayton that's coming, he'll be showing up here for sure. So I guess I'll be heading for the hills somewhere.
He placed his hands on her shoulders so he could look into her eyes.
But I had to come here first to tell you what happened.
Why didn't you come to the house?
I didn't want to get your pa and your uncle mixed up in my troubles. That's why I've been waiting for you out here. I've got no business involving you in the mess I've made of my life. I need supplies and ammunition. I don't have anything but my horse and saddle and the little bit that was left in my saddlebags, So I need to get some of the stuff I left here. I've been camped here for 2 days hoping you'd show up. I don't want to just ride in and upset your folks, but I reckon I don't have any choice. Who knows how much time I've got before a lawman from somewhere shows up. But I had to see you again before I leave.
She moved closer, holding him tightly, her head pressed against his shoulder.
I just found you, and now I have to lose you before we've even had a chance. Where will you go?
I don't know. But maybe if I can keep myself clear of the law, maybe after a while they'll give up and I can come back for you.
I'll go with you.
No, I can't do that. I won't do it. We'd be on the run all the time, never knowing when Clayton or some other lawman would show up. It would be mighty rough living out in the wild country.
He pressed her close to his chest.
I don't want to think about you out in the mountains alone somewhere after some sheriff or marshal puts a bullet in me. I've got to know you're safe here with your father. It's the only way I'll have peace of mind.
Stay with me here tonight. I love you.
It was the first time she had told him that. A tear welled in her eye as she realized that her one chance for happiness was rapidly dying.
I love you.
The words shattered him. He wanted to cry out in protest to the gods that played such vile tricks on miserable mortals. This one woman who held his heart was to be denied him. and he knew that it had to be.
I love you too, Johanna. And if there's any way to make it happen, I'll find us a place that's safe, and I'll come back for you.
She knew he was right. She could not go with him. But she would have gone with him had he asked her to. They spent the rest of the afternoon on their special island. She gave herself in tearful passion, knowing that it was uncertain when, or even if, she would ever see him again. When Johanna entered the house, Bertha was already in the midst of making supper.
I was beginning to worry about you. I was about to send Johan to look for you.
I'm sorry, I guess I just lost track of time.
Usually observant, Bertha was startled when she glanced beyond her niece to discover Clint coming in the door behind her, standing wide-eyed in astonishment and left speechless for once in her life. She looked to Johanna for an explanation.
Clint's just come for some of his things. He's not going to stay.
Then, while her aunt gaped at her, and then at Clint, and then back at her again, Johanna explained Clint's unexpected appearance. Before she finished, the men came in from the lower field, equally astonished to find Clint there.
Clint!
And overjoyed in young Johan's case. The story was repeated, this time by Clint. As Clint had feared, the situation created some concern for Frederick Steiner. He wasn't quite sure what his Christian position should be in the case of a fugitive from the law. Before, when the deputy marshal had come to the house and Clint had agreed to return to serve his sentence, Frederick was satisfied that things were in proper order. Now, he stood a little uncertain. He would not deny Clint hospitality, that was for sure, but he was not comfortable with it. This was not the case with his brother Carl, however. Joanna's father had seen Clint in action when he and his daughter were in grave danger. He had discovered Clint's character and the responsibility he assumed to guarantee Joanna's safety. There was no hesitation on his part. He would help Clint on either side of the law. Bertha listened patiently during the second explanation to the men. She watched Joanna's face when Clint told them about the trial in Cheyenne and his decision to escape. Her heart went out to her niece, for her major concern was for Johanna, and she could see no happy ending to a life on the run with a fugitive. As much as she genuinely liked Clint, she felt she must speak against any ideas Johanna might have in mind.
Clint, I understand completely why you did what you did. But if you care for Johanna, you must know you can't take her with you.
I know that, ma'am. I wouldn't ask her to.
Oh, I knew you had a good head on your shoulders.
Well, why don't you women get some supper on the table? The man's probably half starved.
Could use something to eat, if it's not too much to ask.
Of course you can have something to eat. I'm not going to send you off hungry.
I'm obliged. Then I'll be going as soon as I get one of my pack horses loaded.
Maggie Pitts took a long look at herself in the mirror. Then she touched her cheek with another dab of rouge. It was getting harder and harder to hide the years that had eroded the youthful appearance she had once thought would never fade. She stepped back to examine the full-length image, turning to study one profile, then turning to judge the other. She squinted critically at the beginnings of a wattle beneath her chin and reached up to pull the loose skin back with her fingers.
Well, there ain't nothing I can do about that. Unless I wear dresses low-cut enough to distract male eyeballs.
Resigned to the facts of nature, she finished dressing, took one last look in the mirror at the completed package, and went into the kitchen. Times had been hard these last months, and now that winter was approaching, they would be harder still. Although typically, she usually picked up more short-term boarders in the winter. Usually lonely men who lived most of their lives in temporary camps, caves, or rough cabins. A week in Maggie's big two-story house, eating in a dining room, and if financially able, enjoying the extra benefits offered by the madam, was their reward for surviving the rest of the year in the wilderness. If the customer was not able to afford the delights of the owner of the house, there were always the offerings of Maggie's cook and housekeeper. Half Irish, half Blackfoot, Karina was compensated with free room and board and earned her casual money by servicing occasional drifters. It had been an equitable arrangement, but Maggie was keen enough to see the handwriting on the wall. She was staring life's advancing years in the face, and her sights were always set on finding her financial salvation. The big house that her late husband had built for, at the time the finest structure in Big Timber and still the largest, was now in a state of sad despair and in need of repair. And Maggie's chief assets were her feminine charms and friendly disposition, both of which were losing value every year. For these reasons, Maggie was particular about her appearance on this early fall day. Her new boarders, though rough in appearance, seemed to be flush with money, judging by the size of the rolls they displayed when they paid a week in advance for not one, but two rooms. This might not be the opportunity she hoped for, but it certainly warranted looking into. And not that it mattered, but the big one wasn't that hard to look at. A bath and a shave might even be enough to make him presentable. The skinny one looked a little too much like a weasel to suit her, but when it came down to her needs, she would make either one do. She had been a prostitute when Frank married her, and she was the same now, although she liked to think of herself as a property owner and entrepreneur.
Corinna, are you about ready to put supper on the table?
Yes, ma'am. You can go ahead and ring the bell if you want to. I'm fixing to carry it in now.
Maggie took a tiny dinner bell from the cupboard.
Mr. Smith? Mr. Johnson?
Ballinger and Yancey pulled chairs away from the table and seated themselves. Not waiting for an invitation to start, both men started spooning out platefuls of everything on the table. Karina was just setting a platter stacked with biscuits on the table when Yancey used his fork to spear one of the biscuits before the platter was seated.
Look out there, missy. You'll lose a finger or two.
Ballinger looked at Maggie and grinned.
Old Pete's been living in the woods too long. We ain't hitting such fine trappings as these for a long spell.
Maggie smiled as she sat down at the head of the table. Watching the only two guests in the house attack Karina's steak and gravy, she began to doubt the potential for her long-term salvation. On the other hand, she thought while watching Ballinger chewing on a slab of steak held before him on his fork, if he's rich, he could meet with an early demise just like her late husband. Then she shuddered inwardly. It might be a really rough honeymoon, but her motto was, you do what must be done.
How long will you be staying with us, Mr. Smith?
Yancey glanced up from his plate.
Oh, we don't know. Depends on things.
I thought you were Mr. Johnson.
No. Well, I am. Mr. Smith there was busy eating, and I taught him not to talk with his mouth full.
Maggie's hopes for future planning drained quickly away as the supper progressed. The rough exterior should have been warning enough that the two were no more than outlaws and most likely came by their wealth dishonestly. Now she wished she had not gone to the trouble to put on her best dress to impress these two swine. However, she could still show a profit on the two before they decided to leave town. His appetite sated, Clell pushed back a little from the table while he sipped another cup of coffee.
That little saloon we passing away in here. Can a man get into a little card game there?
I expect so. There's men gambling there most every night.
And maybe get a little something else?
That depends on how much you can afford. You might be able to get something extra somewhere else if the price is right.
Like here?
For the right price.
How much would that be?
$50.
$50? $50, she said. I ain't ever heard no whore charging that much. You must think a hell of a lot of yourself.
I ain't a whore, so it'll cost you more. And I ain't never had a complaint.
Is that so? Hell, as much as we pay for the rooms, that ought to be included.
Well, it ain't. If you want to spend time with a lady, you'll have to pay for it. Otherwise, you can go see one of those hogs that hang around the saloon.
Well, darling, I got the money to buy 10 like you. I'll just try you out tonight and see if you're worth the $50. How about it, Mr. Johnson? You interested in a go-around with this prairie flower?
I don't do doubles. Mr. Johnson can talk to Corinna if he wants to.
Yancey just shrugged indifferently.
All right, Your Highness. We got a deal.
After you take a bath, we'll have a deal. There's a tub in the wash house. Corinna can heat some water for you.
Wait a minute. Ain't nothing been said about no bath.
That's my rule. Don't come to me smelling like the stable.
Oh, what the hell. I reckon I can stand up to a bath this late in the season.
Sometime later, with the definite feeling that he had stepped up into a level of society that he had never experienced before, Clell Ballinger left Maggie's room, content. He went upstairs to dress, where he found Yancey waiting for him.
What are you doing in my room? Ain't you gonna go dip your wick?
Done it. Been waiting for you half an hour.
I swear you can make do with a knot hole in a wooden fence.
Yeah, if it ain't an ugly fence.
Partner, I could get used to this. I ain't never been tended to like I was tonight. Whew.
Ballinger pulled on the same dirty clothes he had ridden in with.
I think I'm about ready to find us a card game.
That's just what I was thinking.
A short time later, they stepped into a room with a plank-topped bar that ran across the upper end of the room, with three tables near the opposite wall, although there was plenty of space for more. The establishment couldn't have been there very long. New buildings like this one would most likely be appearing more frequently since most of the Indians were now on reservations or had fled to the north. Walking with the air of one who had recently struck it rich, Ballinger strode up to the bar and addressed the bartender.
Give me a bottle of this you got, and don't try to slip any of that cheap stuff in a different bottle by me.
Mister, I don't sell cheap or watered-down stock here. I stand behind the whiskey I sell.
Well, good. And we won't have no trouble, will we? Who are the three gents sitting at the back table?
The bartender put a bottle on the bar with two glasses.
Well, the one facing this way is Tom Pullen, and he owns a sawmill. The other two, I don't know. They're just passing through on their way to Bozeman.
Looks to me like we got us enough to have a little game, partner. You got a new deck of cards?
When Clell pulled out a roll of bills to pay him, the bartender's eyes suddenly opened wide.
Yes, sir. I think they were just wishing they had a couple more players.
He slapped an unopened deck of cards on the counter and escorted the two strangers to the table.
Tom, these two gents are looking for a friendly little game of cards.
Matter of fact. Well, I was just talking to these two fellas about that very thing. Sit yourselves down.
While Ballinger and Yancey pulled a couple of chairs over, Pullen glanced at the bartender, who nodded slowly and cut his eyes over toward Clell. Understanding, Pullen nodded back.
Fellas, my name is Tom Pullen.
We don't need to know nobody's name. Just deal the cards and let's play some poker.
Well, there's a real poker player. All right, then, let's cut for deal.
Ballinger studied the sawmill owner and the way he shuffled the cards. He'd be the one to watch, he decided. The other two were a surly pair, drifters. Clell had ridden with many a man just like them. They most likely didn't have enough money to stay in the game long. They started out with a dollar limit, and the first half dozen hands went along quiet enough. One of the drifters won a hand. Clell and Yancey won a couple, and Pullen won one. Pullen suggested they up the limit to $5, and everyone agreed. After a few more hands, with Clell and Yancey both doing all right, one of the drifters, a stocky cur of a man, became dark and brooding as he saw his money rapidly disappearing. He folded for the second hand in a row, and he sat sulking, his eyes fixed on Ballinger, who had just raised. Glancing at his partner across the table, he quirked one corner of his mouth in a surly smile. Then he began to sniff. He sniffed in Pullen's direction. Then he sniffed in Ballinger's direction, sticking his nose close up to Ballinger's face. Across from him, Yancey sat back holding his cards close to his vest, a huge smile spreading across his narrow face, anticipating the fun about to begin.
Damn if I don't believe it must be the time of month for one of you ladies. Which one of you sweet things is it?
I reckon it's me.
Ballinger put his cards face down on the table while the drifter smirked spitefully. In the next instant, the drifter's cheek was split from the corner of his eye to the point of his chin, the result of Ballinger's pistol barrel laid forcefully against the side of his head. The big man was on top of him as soon as he hit the floor. Ballinger hammered the hapless man with the butt of his pistol until the drifter finally lay still. The other drifter started to get up, but Yancey stuck a gun in his ribs.
Clell gets riled easy. You'd best keep your seat.
Ballinger got up from the unconscious man and glared at the other drifter.
You better drag his sorry ass out of here while I'm still in a good mood.
As the battered man's partner struggled to pull him out of the saloon, Pullen started to rake his money from the table, only to receive a menacing stare from the angry man.
Hold on here a minute. Let's see them cards.
Pullen turned over two pair, kings and nines. Ballinger turned his cards face up.
Three fives.
He started to rake the money.
Wait just a minute.
Yancey turned over a low straight. Smiling with gratification, he pulled the pot over to him.
Why, you low down snake in the grass. You was laying back all the time, letting us do the betting.
Well, gentlemen, it's getting late. I expect I'd best be getting home.
Pullen glanced at an equally nervous bartender.
I think I'll use a back door, Jake. It's closer to my horse.
Sure you don't want to hang around? We could play some three-man poker.
Oh, thank you just the same, but I expect my wife's wondering where I am.
Tom grabbed his coat and hurried out the back.
We'll most likely be around a few days.
Ballinger then turned to Yancey.
Grab that there bottle. I reckon we might as well go too.
You reckon one of them Jaspers is waiting outside with a rifle?
I would if it was the other way around. I expect it'd be a good idea if one of us went out the back.
I go out the front. I doubt they'll shoot until they see us both come out, especially you. You go around the back and see if you can catch them before they get off a shot.
Just as they suspected, the drifters were lying in wait outside. Oh! Yancey had to dive for cover when a rifle shot ripped a sizable chunk out of the doorframe only inches from his head. Scrambling on hands and knees, he made it to the protection of the low stoop. Ballinger, sneaking around the building, arrived at the front of the saloon in time to see the rifle blast from the corner of the stable. He immediately returned fire with his pistol. The range was a little too great for accuracy with a pistol, but the repeated fire from Ballinger was enough to surprise the bushwhackers, and they decided not to push their luck. In a few seconds, Ballinger heard the sound of a horse galloping away in the night. Deputy Marshal Mac Thompson paused to take a precautionary look at the chuck wagon parked beside Fiddler's Creek. A modest-sized remuda was roped off near the wagon, and a couple of men were standing near the campfire. They didn't notice the lone rider approaching him from the other side of the creek until he had advanced to within 100 yards.
Hello, the camp! I'm coming in!
Come on, man!
Thompson came closer and saw that both men were holding rifles and looking really nervous.
I'm U.S. Deputy Marshal Mac Thompson.
Floyd and Percy watched the stranger closely as he dismounted.
Howdy, boys.
He pulled his coat open to show him his badge.
Is there any coffee left in that pot?
Thompson saw both men visibly relax.
Oh, why, sure, Marshal. I'll fetch you a cup. Sorry we didn't show you more hospitality, but the last strangers that come into my camp left me with a mighty sore bump on the back of my head.
This immediately snared Thompson's interest.
Much obliged. I'm trailing two outlaws that I'm guessing might have come this way. They held up the bank in Helena.
Well, I expect you're on the right trail. It was two fellas that jumped me, and they was riding some wore-out horses. Stole two of our horses after they sneaked up behind me and knocked me in the head.
Can you tell me what they look like?
Sure. One of them, the one that did most of the talking, was a big fella with black bushy hair in the back. Had a kind of flat nose like somebody had slammed a board across it. The other one was a lanky, skinny kind of fella that didn't say much, but looked like he'd eat your liver if you gave him a chance.
Thompson was certain that Percy had just described Ballinger and Yancey. His description was pretty much the same given by the witnesses at the bank.
That sounds like the two I've been trailing. Which way'd they go?
Yonder way, southeast. They had me hog-tied, but I seen him right off.
Then he remembered what Ballinger had said when they first rode up.
They said they was heading to Big Timber. I don't know if they was or not. I might have known they was bank robbers or something.
Yep, that they were. They managed to get away from the sheriff and a posse out of Helena. I guess I was just lucky to scout out this way for him.
He finished his coffee quickly and stepped up in the saddle.
Much obliged, boys. Thanks for the coffee.
I hope you catch the sons of bitches.
Lem Turner had seen the deputy marshal on a couple of occasions when Thompson had passed through the little settlement before. Once he had boarded his horse in Lem's stable and slept in the stall with it. Now they were both standing just outside that stable.
Yep, Marshal. Them four in the corral, the chestnut and the palomino, and the black and the gray, belong to two fellas that rode in a few days ago. They're staying with Maggie Pitts, a big man with a flat nose and a skinny sidekick. Tom Pullen said they pistol-whipped some fella pretty bad in the saloon a couple nights ago.
All right, much obliged.
Thompson went on his way, confident that he had caught up with the bank robbers. His next stop was Maggie Pitt's rooming house. He found the proprietor setting the table for dinner. She turned around and was startled by the sudden appearance of the gaunt lawman standing right behind her.
My stars! I didn't hear you come in.
He pulled his coat aside to show the badge on his vest.
I'm interested in two of your boarders. Name of Ballinger and Yancey.
Well, I don't have but two guests right now, but their names are Mr. Johnson and Mr. Smith.
Are they here now?
Why, no. I think Corinna said they went to the saloon a little while ago. That's where they spend all their time when they're not here.
I need to see their rooms.
She shrugged indifferently and led the way up the stairs.
Those two at the end of the hall.
You stay out here in the hall.
He went past her and entered the first room. It didn't take much of a search to find the money, stuffed in the saddlebags. A clumsy attempt to hide it had been made by cramming some pieces of clothing on top of it. He found much the same in the other room, leaving little doubt that these two were the men who held up the bank. He considered taking the stolen money with him then, but he decided it would be safe enough right where it was for a short time. Besides, he had taken a good look and felt he'd be able to tell whether any was missing when he came back for it. The first order of business was to get Ballinger and Yancey in irons. The two bank robbers were sitting at the back table when Thompson walked in.
You want a drink, mister?
Maybe later.
As Thompson walked back to the table, Ballinger looked up and started studying him.
Well now, maybe we got us somebody to get up a little game of cards. You looking for a little action?
You could say that. What do you say we start with you two putting your hands in the air and standing up?
Thompson drew his Colt 45.
Whoa. Now what's the trouble, friend? Is this a holdup? Right here in front of a witness?
Nope. This is an arrest for robbing the bank in Helena.
Thompson cut his eyes only briefly toward Yancey, who was starting to shift in his chair.
You best get your hands up on the table where I can see them. Both of you. I'm not gonna tell you again. So if you don't want to get shot right here where you sit, get him up.
Now, take it easy there, Sheriff. Ain't no sense in anybody getting shot. Me and Yancey ain't gonna cause no trouble.
Ballinger placed his left hand on the table, but before following with his right, he grasped the .44 he habitually rested between his legs anytime he played cards. Thompson didn't have a second to react. The bullet struck him in the groin. Ballinger and Yancey stood and unloaded on him.
Not today, Sheriff.
Ballinger swung around to level his pistol at the wide-eyed bartender.
Don't you get no ideas about pulling that shotgun from under the bar, unless you're looking to be a dead hero.
No, sir.
The bartender immediately slapped both hands palm down on the bar. Ballinger turned his attention back to the lawman on the floor. He reached down and ripped the badge from Thompson's vest.
Huh. He ain't a sheriff. He's a marshal. It might be a smart thing for us to move on.
Yeah, and I was hoping to stay around here a little longer.
Back at the rooming house, Maggie Pitts was on her knees, rifling through Ballinger's saddlebags.
God almighty! There must be $1 million in here!
She hadn't waited long after the marshal left. As soon as Karina called from the front window that Thompson was out of sight, she had rushed into Ballinger's room to verify what she had suspected.
Karina, take two or three of those little bundles and stuff the clothes back over the rest.
Evening, ladies.
Caught red-handed, with several packets of bills on the floor at her knees, Maggie and Karina could only stare fearfully up at the glowering Clell Ballinger in the doorway. Yancey came in behind Ballinger. Ballinger walked over to stand directly over Maggie.
We were just cleaning up your rooms. We were gonna put everything back.
I'll bet you was.
Ballinger backhanded Maggie so hard that it knocked her over on her side.
Thinking you was gonna steal from me, was you? And I'd never know the difference, right?
He took her by her blouse and swung with all his might. Unable to satisfy his anger, he swung at her again and again.
Help! Clell! She's dead!
Half crazed in his fury, Ballinger turned to look at his partner as if he was just realizing he was not alone.
You done beat her to death!
The rage that had erupted inside him slowly began to ebb like an angry ocean's tide, and he dropped the lifeless body to the floor.
All right. I expect we best pack up and get the hell out of here.
He looked then at Karina.
I ain't leaving no witnesses.
I know it, but I ain't through with her yet. I'm taking her with us.
The hell you are.
Ballinger glared directly at Karina.
You understand what's about to happen, half-breed?
No.
I'll go get our horses. While I'm gone, pack our things and all the food and stuff you can find in the kitchen, and anything else we might use.